This is episode 57 of IDRA Class Notes.
If there are schools where racial tension and hostility and name-calling just keeps popping up, well, then there's obviously something that is not going on in the environment that needs to occur. People may not be asking the right questions, really digging deeply enough into what is precipitating that kind of interaction between kids across race. Mm-hmm. And when leadership, teachers and administrators and adults aren't willing to confront that, well, then that just festers, it grows.
Welcome to the IDRA Class Notes Podcast. I'm Christy Goodman. In this podcast series, we explore issues facing education today and strategies for teachers and administrators to better serve all students. We'd love to hear your comments about this show. Please let us know what you think about it and any questions that you have. There will be details at the end of this podcast on how to do that. And if you like our show, we ask that you tell three others or leave a review for us on iTunes. Even if you don't use iTunes to get this podcast, you can still leave a short review. That helps others find us. For those of you who are not subscribing to this podcast to receive it automatically, we have an email alert that will let you know when a new episode is available. Just go to our website and sign up. And while you're there, don't forget to sign up for our free monthly Graduation for All electronic newsletter and our new IDRA News electronic newsletter. Our topic for today is Helping Schools Address Issues of Race with Dr. Bradley Scott. Good morning.
Good morning, Christy.
Bradley directs the IDRA South Central Collaborative for Equity, which is the Equity Assistance Center funded by the U.S. Department of Education to serve schools in Arkansas, Louisiana, New Mexico, Oklahoma, and Texas. He has a master's degree in early childhood and elementary education from the University of Texas at San Antonio, and a doctor of philosophy with a concentration in educational administration from the University of Texas at Austin. He is a national leader in the area of equitable schooling and is the developer of the 6 goals of educational equity that are being used across the country to help school leaders. Now, as we get into this topic, I know we've come a long way, but racism is still a problem in our communities and thus in our schools. And tell me, how have we seen changes in terms of what kinds of race issues schools are facing and what they're facing today?
First of all, it's really great to be on this side of the conversation, so thank you for that opportunity. And Christy, I almost wanted to call this session the elephant in the room, a commentary on race, because there are certain issues about race and its forms, whether racial prejudice, racism, that are historic, and we're still dealing with some of those manifestations. But I think also now in 2009, in the 21st century, there are some subtleties of racism that we are having to confront that have created and to continue to create persistent issues and problems and challenges in our public schools. Mm-hmm. And so we see the results in terms of kids and their performance. As we disaggregate student outcome data, we can see that certain populations by race still crop up as being those who are least likely to graduate, most likely to be overrepresented in disciplinary actions and suspensions and expulsions, least likely to be appropriately or comparably represented in higher level courses and gifted and talented courses or college preparatory courses. So we see the manifestations of problems as it can be identified by race. And that's on one level. On another level, we see some of the historic attitudes and prejudices about race that still persist. And they come out in various, sometimes in historic ways, where you get into name calling and you can see racial hatred being manifested in terms of hostility and so forth. But we also see a more subtle presentation of attitudes and prejudices and stereotypes that still exist in the culture, still exist in the community, so therefore they still exist in our schools. And we educators then have to become concerned with how do we first of all identify these manifestations of prejudice and stereotype and bias and bigotry, and then how do we deal with them? How do we eradicate them from the schooling experiences of all learners, regardless of their race, their class, their ethnicity, or their language?
And you mentioned elephant in the room. I assume part of that means the adults in the school recognizing what students know all too well is present.
Exactly. And what I have found that adults also know is present, but don't want to necessarily deal with.
Okay.
I think we're dealing with two kinds of things in 2009 and probably beyond. that many of us are of an age where we still remember what issues of race and race relations looked like in this country in the 60s and 70s. And so we either feel we have dealt with these issues and so we don't have to deal with them any longer, or we dealt with these issues and they were unpleasant then and uncomfortable then, so it's tough to want to go back to that place. Or we are find in our schools people who just don't have a history because they grew up in a different time. And don't have a way of thinking about these issues, and so they just don't have an eye for seeing some of these realities. And until they begin to get support for understanding how to look at what's going on in schools and seeing what may be happening in, with regards to race, they just don't know how to do that sort of thing.
Right. So when school leaders recognize that they have a problem they need to address, how do they get support? Where do they turn?
Well, the first place I hope all people across the nation, school folks, would turn to the Equity Assistance Centers. Now, remember, we have 10 of them, and we have them listed on our website, and certainly no matter where our listeners are located in this country or its territory is, they can call upon the Equity Assistance Centers that are funded to provide training and technical assistance to help them to deal with these kinds of issues, any issues dealing with equitable educational opportunity, issues of civil rights in public schools, racial and sexual hostility and violence that is occurring in our schools in all of its forms and manifestations, as well as how do we increase achievement for all kinds of learners across race and gender and national origin.
And there is an Equity Assistance Center that is yours in the sense of, depending on where you live or where your school is located, there is one that is assigned to support you.
Exactly.
And ours is this five-state area that we talk about that you direct.
Exactly.
But you also work with all of the centers. I know that y'all network together.
We have a national network of the 10 of us. There are 10 of these centers. And so we constantly stay in touch, sharing information, resources, practices, ways of providing technical assistance and training, specifically to support administrators and teachers and parents and communities as they work to build better schools for all kids, regardless of their differences.
And that's free of charge to them?
These services come at no cost to them at a point in time. That's based upon the level of funding that the individual centers receive and the number of resources they have for providing that assistance. You know, there are no unlimited resources, but certainly to the degree possible,
And I know that some schools come to you not necessarily voluntarily in the sense that they have been ordered by courts.
Courts or the Department of Justice or the Office for Civil Rights because they have, in fact, in some way, allegedly violated some aspect of Title VI of the Civil Rights Act that prohibits discrimination on the basis of race, color, and national origin. Or Title IX of the Educational Amendments of 1972 that prohibits discrimination based upon gender, which are the areas that we deal with. But, of course, then there's Section 504 of the Rehabilitation Act of 1973 that prohibits discrimination based upon handicap and condition. So they may be directed to us to seek technical assistance, or the federal courts, who may be overseeing desegregation activity in districts around our nation, may require those districts to call upon us for support.
Which doesn't mean that we come in armor and
we are technical assistance.
We go in and work collaboratively with them.
We're technical assistance providers. Absolutely.
So when you know you're going to work with a particular school, which I know happens all the time, how do you begin?
Well, there are various levels of intervention. So, and it's we normally start from wherever it is the school invites us in. We have to be invited in as Equity Assistance Centers. But for instance, if they're inviting us in because of some curricular concern or instructional need, that may be our point of entrance. So we go in and we may work with teachers or curriculum specialists or department chair people if that's the point of entrance. Or if we're invited in because we're working with leadership, administrative leadership, they may want some specialized training in terms of what are the issues we need to be looking at. You know, we want to do something differently. Evidently, something we're doing with regards to our students is not working, or we're experiencing a problem that is clearly racial, or we're experiencing a lot of sexual harassment that's going on, or a lot of bullying and teasing that we need to deal with. So whatever their point of entrance for us is, that's where we start. And then we begin to lay out what are the possible kinds of issues or challenges they're actually facing, either that become manifested in that area of their request,
right,
or that are in the environment that they're not looking at. So
okay,
we help them to look at and actually conduct a needs assessment to see what is going on, so that we can target our service delivery based upon their identified needs, on the real needs, as opposed to a lot of speculation. So we help them to look at the environment, the schooling experience they're providing for kids and in support of families, and see what is really going on.
So it's not a cookie cutter kind of approach. It's very tailored
to
what their situation is.
It has to be tailored. I mean, generally there are some common issues that give rise to common ways of thinking, acting, behaving. But you really do have to look at that setting and see what the dynamics of that setting actually is. And the focus always is on the kids. You know, it's not about what's working best for me as a teacher or as an administrator, but what's working best for the population of students that we are serving to produce the kinds of student outcomes we want to create. Or what's preventing us from creating those kinds of things. So for instance, if there are schools where racial tension and hostility and name-calling just keeps popping up, well, then there's obviously something that is not going on in the environment that needs to occur. People may not be asking the right questions or really digging deeply enough into what is precipitating that kind of interaction between kids across race. You may find gangs out in a community that also have some way of existing on campuses. And when leadership, teachers and administrators and adults aren't willing to confront that, well, then that just festers, it grows. And its manifestations can be very devastating in terms of how kids end up treating one another, acts of violence that may occur. The way instruction cannot happen because you're so busy trying to keep a lid on everything. And so at some point in time, somebody needs to feed that elephant in the room or get that elephant out of the way, you know, entirely.
Are you seeing that more with a certain grade level? I don't mean grade level, but high school, middle school, elementary?
You see that this kind of acting out happening more at the secondary level.
Yeah,
so upper middle school and high school. But you certainly find its origins in elementary school, where kids begin in third and fourth grade, begin pushing each other around and bullying and teasing each other. And so that bullying and teasing, which also can have a racial dimension added to it, if unchecked, becomes the way then the kids begin to formulate how they think about people who are like them or different from them. People they consider to be inside with them or outside with them. Outside from them, and then how they interact with one another, and the physical manifestations of that become more demonstrative the older they get. So that by the time you can get into the high school level, you actually see young men and women acting not unlike their mothers and fathers do out in the community, in the world, because now those patterns are becoming set, those ways of thinking, acting, and behaving across issues of race and gender and class and language.
And, of course, academic achievement, the gaps there happen at all levels.
At all levels, absolutely. And so leadership, once again, has an obligation, I think, ongoingly, to as they are disaggregating data and looking at what's really going on. When they consistently see these persistent gaps in performance for certain populations, to ask, you know, the tough questions about what's going on. And if this is what we're doing and it's producing these results, what do we need to be doing differently to produce different kinds of results? And why is it always this population? What are we failing to see that's causing us to underserve or to improperly serve that population as opposed to these who are doing well?
Now, Mitch, talk about the cultural process model.
Well, that's a part. That's one of the ways by which we help school districts to look at what's going on. And if one could envision that there are a series of circles, with the end result or the end circle being high student outcomes being the result, what we have to do, and this is a process that was originally developed by Dr. Thomas Carter that in my own research and work I have modified over the years. But it starts with what is what I call the schooling experiences of kids. That becomes the circle, the world that we create on a given campus. And Dr. Carter, as well as I, talk about then how do you break that schooling experience down into the various subsystems that make it up? One of those subsystems being management and direction. How does that occur on a campus? And who is responsible for that? A second of those circles is curriculum and instruction. What does that look like? And the third of those circles is the culture and the environment of that campus, and you know, surface and deep cultural aspects of that campus. And the fourth is our issues of how professional development, how human development occurs for adults and children, professionals and non-professionals who are a part of that campus. These subsystems interact in a certain kind of way to create the schooling experience of kids. And so helping the leadership, helping teachers to look at how is that being created?
Okay.
Who has a voice in it?
Yeah.
Who has power to control those different subsystems that make up the schooling experience of kids? And who's being left out of those conversations and those decisions also becomes a part of this issue. Many times we can see that one racial group may be in the leadership, may be the decision makers, making decisions about another racial group. You may go into a campus where the student population is 99.99% Hispanic, but the leadership is predominantly Anglo. And so it racially creates a very different schooling experience than if the racial makeup were otherwise.
Good. So you have a framework to go in with.
A way of looking at it and helping.
A structure to help in a situation that could just seem so
overwhelmingly impossible
to
deal with. Absolutely.
Now, you talked about school culture and environment some. Talk a little more about that.
Well, a huge issue for me. I think that in that school culture environment, we find things like the hidden curriculum. We find people's attitudes and expectations of teachers.
Yes.
It's not just the formal course of study and the methods and materials, but it's how people think about the world.
Yes.
In the hidden curriculum, what values do they hold? And who do they value? Whose voice is important? How do people have voice? Who do they believe can succeed?
Which kids can make it and which ones aren't going to.
Even which kids are worth our spending our time on?
Yes.
What are the norms that impact the schools? You know, the values, the standards, the belief system. That's an important issue. Who makes policy? You know, who on that school board makes policy and controls and guides governance? Because that also affects the culture of the school. And then, of course, many people have talked about surface aspects of culture, but more importantly, deep aspects of culture that create the learning environment of the school itself. And all of the issues that impact how people are assessed, how people have a chance to practice leadership, share in issues of equal status, get to know one another, feel that we have something in common, even though we are different. We have something in common and we can work together using our differences in a positive way rather than a negative way. Issues of institutional support that are part of the culture. All of that really is what school leadership, and when I talk about leadership, I don't mean just administrators, but I'm talking also about teacher leadership, parent leadership needs to deal with in terms of building quality schooling for all kinds of kids across race and gender and national origin.
Okay.
Yeah.
We're running low on time, but I do want to this is a big issue sometimes with schools. So what successes have you seen?
Oh, Christy, over the years, all kinds of successes. But it does involve people being courageous enough to look at issues of race and, you know, look at them face to face and do three things. One of which is, first of all, admit that there are issues of race that we have to deal with. And then to be able to describe, secondly, what those issues of race are that may be preventing us from reaching the outcomes for kids that we want to reach. It involves a third level of self-examination. I think that when we as leadership, whether we are teachers or administrators or parents, you know, to be able to look within ourselves and say, what are the prejudices and the attitudes and the perceptions I have that I need to work past so that I can work in the best interest of all of our kids on this campus? And so those are tough challenges. And then the action part of that is given who we all are across all of our differences in this community, that is our school community. How do we work together to create the best experience and keep asking ourselves the tough questions, keep challenging ourselves to do the right thing in the best interest of all of our students and not just a selected population of our students? And many times that requires sometimes turning to friends and colleagues and saying, you're doing that wrong, or you need to be doing something differently, or that I'm doing something wrong and I need to be more open and receptive to trying something that may be intimidating to me, maybe a little scary, maybe a little bit uncomfortable, but in the best interest of our kids and to keep everybody safe and protected and valued to do this better, bigger, other thing.
And I know that you have helped schools pull in community to support that work.
Yes.
And in fact, I'm sure it lasts longer than it might otherwise because the whole community is involved.
Yeah, because the whole community is involved, committed, and have a greater sense of ownership because they're a part of raising the tough questions, trying to find the right answers to these tough questions, and then do a different kind of thing, which requires new learning, new development, new capacities in order to do a different kind of thing.
All the benefit for educating our students.
For educating kids, absolutely.
Well, thank you so much.
Absolutely, Chrissy, a great pleasure.
Good conversation.
There are many issues that we could look at, and I'm looking forward to having another one of these.
To do that.
Absolutely.
Yes. And thank you to our listeners. Let me remind you to let us know what you think. If you have any questions or comments that you want to make about our conversation today, we would love to hear them. And the instructions are on their way on how to do that. Thanks so much.
Thank you for listening to IDRA Class Notes. For more information on IDRA and other Class Notes topics, go to www.idra.org. You can also send us your thoughts by email to podcast@idra.org, or fill out the form on our podcast webpage at www.idra.org/podcasts.